Yeah. So it's so out of the question. It's not possible. You should actually. So I, you want to fly? A person could want to fly. Yeah. Children. Everyone wants to soar. Yeah. Physically, spiritually. Huh?
Al Sharpton
wants to.
He says he wants to be able to fly, and he can fly. And he can fly high to any person.
Peter Pan.
Yeah. So even if you want to fly, but it's so out of the question. You know, it's b'chlal not shayach. So it already, the taiva is there, but it already doesn't translate itself in an actual plan. Zogdev and Nazra, that a person has to understand that when you have a possession over something, it's never connected with how wise or talented you are. It's connected because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants you should have it. And therefore, if Hashem does not want you should have it, as much as you will desire it, you're not going to get it. So that's the Lois Achmet. The bias could be very beautiful. Eishis Riach as well. Avdei, Amos, Yesheri, V'chameri. But when the person is permeated with this awareness, that Avin Ezra says, that it comes from the Eibishter, it comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so the Lois Sachmaid is never translated into the next level. By the Bein Nitz, a similar issue. Ad Nefesh HaBahamis he has, and therefore a Taivi can have, a Taivi to an Avera. But nevertheless, the thought of actually going ahead and doing it doesn't exist by him. Why doesn't it exist by him? The awareness of the divine reality is so powerful. The awareness, the appreciation of what is true in life is so powerful. The awareness of what constitutes his own true good, which is only when you serve your nefesh elikis, that's your true good, is so deep and so powerful, so real, that the actual performance of something which is antithetical to this reality and this truth is out of the question by him. And since it's a mufrich, it's out of the question by him. It's so out of the question, he doesn't even go ahead and think to actually go ahead and do it. And we see this in every human being. There are certain things you might crave for. But the awareness of their negativity is so deep that you don't even go actually entertain an idea to go and do it. By way of illustration, you know, sometimes you have a task that you have to complete in 2 hours. You have a task. And you're very hungry. You didn't eat all day. You were working on this thing all day. It's completing something, whatever it may be. So there are two times. There are usually two stages. There's one stage when the thing is so geschmack, and you're so indulged in it, and you love it so much that although you didn't eat for the past 24 hours, you totally don't even feel your hunger. A person has that in his life. He's so much connected with this, and his soul is so deeply nourished from it, he doesn't even feel his starvation. How do we know? The moment he finishes, he suddenly sees how hungry he is. But then there is another stage in the game. You're very busy, and you talk have a geschmack in it. But nevertheless, it's not to the extent that you don't sense a hunger. You sense it. You sense the fact. But you're so occupied with this. You're so busy with this. You know I have to finish it in a half an hour. I don't have those 5 minutes or those 15 minutes to eat. So it's not pshat that you plan. You think, let me go eat it. Now, then there's another thought. No, I'm not going to do it. The whole craving never translates itself in an actual thought to go ahead and do it. This isn't a simple issue. This is the difference between the Beinoni by davening and the Beinoni after davening. The Beinoni by davening is in that state where he doesn't even feel the hunger. But it's still not like the tzaddik. The tzaddik is not hungry. The Beinoni is very hungry. The tzaddik doesn't have a nefesh habahamas, or has taki subdued it. The nefesh habahamas has been changed by the tzaddik. By the Beinoni, the physiological structure that causes a person to be hungry has not changed even a bit. He is so overwhelmed by another reality that craving is asleep. But then when he wakes up, when he, so to speak, sobers up, he comes out after davening, he's hungry. And in the Beinoni's case, this is a metaphor for the spiritual dichotomy in the Beinoni, the Nefesh HaBahamas speaks up. But the Nefesh HaBahamas craves, taka, and desires, but the impulse, although the Beinonis are very well aware of it, never actually affects a thought to go ahead and act upon it. And this is the deeper difference between the Rosh and the Beinoni. The Rosh's life, this out of the question issue doesn't exist. It's not out of the question. It's not out of the question. It's possible that the Rosh should never sin, theoretically, not practically, theoretically, due to circumstances. But the very fact, the very notion that it's not out of the question, that deems him a Rosh in the Tanya terminology. It means that in his soul, the performance of something which is antithetical to the divine will is not out of the question. That deems him a Rosh. By a Beinoni, no. By a Beinoni, it's absolutely mufrach, it's abgefrecht. Which means, in other words, as follows. Just to clarify what's going on over here. We could perhaps divide, generally speaking, the map of the human personality into five distinctions. Four distinctions. We have, of course, the ocean of our subconscious self. Then we have the ocean of our conscious self. Okay, then you have the actualization of yourself into concrete deeds, but in between there's something else. There's that aspect of the conscious self which is the immediate source of your behavior. And there is the difference between the Beinoni and the Rosh. Subconscious self is the difference between the Tzadik Gomer and Tzadik Sheini Gomer. The Tzadik Gomer is absolutely Nefesh Elikis on all levels, even subconscious self. Tzadik Sheini Gomer, subconscious self not, but on the conscious self only Nefesh Elikis. Beinoni on the conscious self, Nefesh Elikis, also Nefesh HaBahamas. Nefesh HaBahamas is Klippa. The state of his soul is in a Klippadik state. But then there's the next state. That aspect of self, which is the determinant, the immediate source of your behavior. By the Beinoni, that has been given over to his creator, by the Rosh not. By the Beinoni, that aspect in self that is the determinant of the behavior that's dominated by the Nefesh HaLikis. I gave an example 2 weeks ago of a smoker. Imagine a person who's smoking, constantly smoking. He's blatantly confronted with the fact that smoke is killing him. And he meditates hours upon hours on the very fact how smoke is simply detrimental to his health. And he begins to appreciate it. And he begins identifying with this knowledge that to the extent that with his mind's eyes he graphically sees how every puff he's drawing is pashut killing him. On the other hand, he devotes many hours to meditate upon how much he enjoys life and his beautiful relationship with his loved ones, with his wife, with his children, with his family. And therefore, how much he loves life and he wants to be healthy and he wants to live and enjoy longevity. Now, will this person smoke? Will this person smoke? A normal person we're talking about. No. Does it mean he doesn't possess a craving to it anymore? The very structure of his physiological self at the moment is perhaps addicted to nicotine. And that addiction continues. He gravitates towards nicotine. But the powerful awareness that he has gained will not allow him to smoke. So there's a certain addiction that exists. But the act, taking the addiction to the next level, of actually going ahead and planning to do it, that won't exist in his life. The Beinoni does this concerning every issue of Torah mitzvahs. So hirhurim, the Alter Rebbe says, there are. Hirhurim, there are. When you have a taiva, you have a hirur. But the hirur is about the thing, about your craving to it, about the beauty of it, about the concept of it, even about you doing it on a hypothetical level, but never entertaining the notion of actually going ahead and doing it. So even after davening, the awareness that he gained during davening lasts. It lasts throughout the day. And the Alter Rebbe continues. Va'afilu. The terminology of this stage would be called Ratzin. Okay. The Ratzin, yeah. Tainug is much higher. Tainug would be the deeper self. He still has a Tainug in other issues. Ratzin you mean in the sense of convictions of how do you live your life, versus Tainug is what you gain the light and pleasure of. Ratzin you mean as a conviction of what's right and what's wrong. Of behaviors, Ratzin, yeah. Yeah. That source which of controlling your behavior. It's another issue. Let's not get into that. V'afilu b'mayach levade. Furthermore, even in the mind alone, laharibera, with respect to sinful thoughts, ein lishlito memshala laharir chas v'shala b'ritzein eshe b'mayach. The evil has not the dominion and power to cause him, God forbid, to think such thoughts consciously. Sheikabel beratzin chas v'shalom, hiru zahara ha'oyla me'elav me'alev l'mayach kana. To cause the mind to accept willingly, God forbid, the evil thought that rises of its own accord from the heart to the mind is explained above. Elamiyad, what does the Beinoni do? Elamiyad b'aliyasi l'sham. Instead, immediately upon the thoughts rising to the mind, teicheyu b'shtei yadayim, he, the Beinoni, thrusts it aside, as it were, with both hands, umeisiyach daite, and averts his mind from it, miyad sheniskeshu hirara. The instant he realizes that it is an evil thought, ve'einei mekabli b'ratzen, he will refuse to accept it willingly, afilu laharer b'ratzen, even as a subject for mere conscious thought. The kol shekein lahaloisei al hadas la'aseisi chas v'shalom will certainly not entertain the notion of acting on it, God forbid. I feel a ledaber boy, or even speaking of it, ki amaharir beratzen, for he who willingly indulges in such thought, nikur rasha b'isasha, is deemed a rasha at that moment, v'habeinini, eine rasha filu shachas lo'ilam, while the beinini is never wicked even for a single moment. So this is where the distinction of the different types of irhurim are. To say that the Beinoni should bechlal not experience any thoughts from the Nefesh HaBahamas, not experience any thoughts that are antithetical to the divine blueprint, absolutely not. The Beinoni will, because there is that aspect in thought which is instinctive. Everything, as we spoke last week, is processed through and in the brain, through and in the thought. Or in the terminology, in another Hasidic discourse, thought is the mirror of the heart. So every craving will immediately express itself and project itself via man's thought. So therefore the Beinoni will experience hirurim, thoughts, from the Nefesh HaBahamas that are antithetical to the Hashem and His blueprint and His desire and what's true and what's real. The distinction over here is to accept and embrace these thoughts with his conscious will, that the Beinoni will not do. The very notion, you have a taiva to something, yeah, you have an unhealthy taiva. So you think about it. Now, but now what happens? Comes the Alter Rebbe and tells you, who says that you have to complete every thought that comes to your mind?
Hack it up. Stop it. No one tells you to complete it. It's not so easy. You have a taiva, so what happens when you have a taiva? It starts building momentum. It immediately rises to your mind. You start thinking about it. But the Rebbe says, fine. That we do not blame the Beinoni, because just like you cannot demand him to change his heart to eradicate his nefesh habehemah, you can demand for him to eradicate these irurim. They are very natural. They are part and parcel of the stuff of his chemistry, of his spiritual chemistry, of his psychological anatomy. But now, what's the next step? The next step, you do not have to complete every thought. You start thinking about it. Stop it. Miyad b'liyosil Hashem, it rises. And you don't think it affects the Beinoni? His whole life it affects him. Wherever he is, whenever he goes, certain times not Beis HaTefillah, other times perhaps. The Nefesh HaBahamas is there. And it projects itself in his life. But miyad b'liyosil Hashem, decheyu b'shtei yadayim. Why decheyu b'shtei yadayim? Why they chayy b'shtei yadayim? Why? Because the Beinoni has a mayach. And the Beinoni is very well aware of what's right and what's wrong. And he realizes what is true and what is untrue. And he knows that mayach shalat al alav. And therefore, in every situation and circumstance, he is not obligated to fall prey to the left's cravings. So this is the distinction. Not only does he not do it, not only does he not talk about it, he doesn't even think about it willingly. Even thinking about it abstract willingly, certainly not thinking about doing it. And Alter Rebbe continues. Let's conclude the parak, it's just another few lines. So too in matters between man and his fellow man. Till now, he was talking basically between man and his God, his creator. Same as Shemidvam Shemadam Lachavede. Here is also where the Beinoni is the mirror of the ordinary man versus the tzaddik. When someone harms you, when someone harms us, a healthy person knows that if someone needs to get even with someone else, it means that they themselves are ill. If you have to get even with the other person. Because if you don't have a problem, if you're not ill, why do you have to get even with the other person? Just because he's ill, you should also be ill. Just because he's a harmer, you should also be a harmer. The fact that we have a need to get even with another person, and we're not satisfied, is a problem within us. It's not only a problem with another person. Same is true. If as a result of what someone does to you or tells to you, you start hating him or despising him. That's a problem with you. It's an illness within myself or within that human being. You know why? The very fact that because he did something to you, as a result of that, he managed and succeeded in making you a hateful person. In fact, from the Torah perspective, when we hate someone else as a result of what this person did to us, it's not we hate him. We hate something about ourselves. That hate is being projected in the other person. That hate. The very fact that this person made us a hater, there's something that's a problem with us. The tzaddik, it doesn't exist. The tzaddik, the nefesh elikis, is the only reality. So his interaction with people is always based on the nefesh elikis. So, for example, when someone insults the tzaddik, you know what his immediate response is? You know what his immediate response is when someone... A good insult. The moment he insults him, he identifies with the other person's frustration. He must have had a terrible day in work. He identifies with the person's background, with his problems. And then, at the next thought that comes to him is... Maybe he has a point. Why did divine providence have it that I should hear this be said about me? Maybe subtly there's some truth to it. And The whole, yeah. But the Bein is not like that. The Bein is a Nefesh HaBahamas. And Nefesh HaBahamas is egotistical and selfish. So the response is different. You humiliated me. You realize what's going on. The Tzaddik doesn't know that. He's so attuned with God. He's so attuned with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The ego, the arrogance, doesn't play a role in his life. So the response is based on what's true, on what's right, on vision. But the Beinoni is not like that. The Beinoni has enough Shabbahamas. In the soul of the Beinoni, he feels his reality more than God, Hashem's reality. In the soul of the Beinoni, he feels the I more than the real I, which is Hashem. And therefore, those natural responses that come as a result of that exist in the life of the Beinoni. And the Alter Rebbe says, most people are like that. You have enough Shabbahamas. The question is, where do you take it from there? That's what he says. Miyad sha'ay, listen what the Beinoni does. Miyad sha'ay l'alei me'alev l'mayach, eizei tinevishin nechas v'shalom. As soon as there rises from his heart to his mind any animosity or hatred, which means he will experience that immediate sensation of animosity or hatred as a result of the Nefesh HaBahamas. And what happens? Now the momentum starts building. I hate you. I despise you, right? All in the mind, yeah? Not necessarily hatred. Ezekin, jealousy. Ikas, anger, or kpeda, a grudge. The demain and their like. Einay mekablon klal b'meichay uberitzayin. He will bar them from his mind and will, refusing even to think about them. The very notion, the very sensation will inevitably exist. That very sensation will inevitably cause instinctive thoughts to rise to your mind. But what now? Zagdal Rebbe, Eini Mekablon Klal. Since he has an awareness of what's true and what's untrue, since he has an awareness of the divine reality, since he has an awareness of what constitutes his own true, deeper self and good as Nefesh HaLikis, fine. So I have this problem, I have this type. New. So that means I have to go and subjugate and become enslaved to my Nefesh HaBahamas. Stop it! The Adirab, on the contrary, Hamayach Shalat or Meisel Beruach Shebeli Belazes Ahepich Mamash. His mind will prevail over and dominate the feelings of his heart to do the exact opposite. Internally, you don't feel like it. You have a craving to do something else, but the Mayach is in control. If this is the right thing, so you don't have to follow your love. So acting, he'll act opposite. Namely, to conduct himself towards his fellow with a quality of kindness. And to display towards his fellow a disproportionate love. In being civil from him. Civil and... Tolerating him. I didn't want to say the word suffer. Tolerating him at tzayacher till the furthest extreme. V'leilichis chas shalom, without being provoked into anger, God forbid. V'gam shalei lefal shalom leikifale chas shalom. Or to take revenge in kind, God forbid, even without anger. Ela adirabba, but on the contrary. Ligmay l'chayavim tevis, to repay offenders with favors, k'mashakasav b'zayir, as taught in the Zayir in Parshas Miketz, l'umid m'yaysef imechav. The Zayir tells us, elaborates at length how we have to learn from the example of Yosef's conduct with his brothers. He repaid them for the suffering they brought upon him with kindness and favors. He sustained them while they were in Egypt. So the Zayir tells us how each and every single one of us has to learn from the relationship between Yosef and his brothers. And this is the Beinoni. Both in issues of the relationship between man and his creator, and in relationship of man and his fellow Jew, he institutes an internal dynamic in his life that allows only his positive impulses come to fruition. I just want to conclude. I told you I'm going to conclude with a short Pesach story.
God is telling David HaMelech, when one of the enemy was cursing him and wants to kill him, so David HaMelech said, "Look, Hashem opened his mouth."
Shimi Ben Gayer, Shimi Ben Gayer. Two. The next Sunday and the Sunday afterwards, there won't be a shir.
Right, it's 3 weeks. Today.
Huh?
It's 3 weeks today.
Yeah, and the shir will resume on the Sunday, the 26th of April, which is the 30th day of Nisan. I want to conclude with a short story, very moving one, connected to the holiday of Pesach, which we commence this following coming Friday night. Reb Levi Yitzchak Barditchev was a colleague and a friend, a very close friend of the Alter Rebbe. They both studied at the feet of the great Maggid of Mizritch, the pupil and student of the Baal Shem Tov, who replaced the Baal Shem Tov in leading the Hasidic movement in its early formative years. Reb Levi Yitzchak one Pesach performed a Seder at night. Reb Levi Yitzchak Seder, there was nothing like it. The beauty, the holiness, the spirituality, the godliness that characterized the holy Barditchev Seder was one of a kind, one of a kind. In the morning by Shachris, they showed him from heaven that his Seder in the eyes of Hashem paled in comparison to the Seder of Chaim the water carrier, who lives in Barditchev. They told him that the greatest, deepest, holiest Seder that was performed this year, Pesach, in the universe, was the Seder of Chaim, the water carrier that lives in Barditchev. Barditchev was the city where he lived. Fine. Well, Yitzchak was amazed. He was astonished. He called some of the family members. Asked, "Do you know who Rabbi Chaim from Barditchev is?" He said, "We don't know such a person." So he immediately summoned a few of his students. He said, "You have to go find for me Chaim from Barditchev and bring him to me, please." So they go to shul. They ask Reb Chaim of Barditchev. No one knows. Reb Chaim. They search here and there. They're asking around. No one ever heard of such a man. Finally, one person they meet in the street says, "Yeah, but..." He says, "Of course, a Reb Chaim. He's not a Reb. He's the furthest thing you can get from Reb. Yeah, he's a simple Jew, a peasant, never comes to shul, barely knows how to daven. He lives mamish at the end of the city." Fine. It's already afternoon time, it's after Shachris. Bovitzchak is waiting to start the meal till they come back. They go to the door. They knock on the door with trembling hands. A woman comes to the door. "We have to see Chaim, the water carrier." She says, "Gewald, he's drunk, he's dead drunk." They come into the house, a guy laying on the floor, absolutely intoxicated, snoring like a real peasant. They say, "Is everything all right?" He says, "This guy, he's drunk already since yesterday afternoon, he's drunk. Did he do a Seder?" "He a Seder? He was so intoxicated, he couldn't even do a Seder." But Yitzchak says it was the most beautiful Seder that existed in the world. So they go, they start waking him up. "Chaim, Chaim, the Rebbe wants to see you." He's not budging, he can't budge. They start waking him and pushing him and shoving him. He can't budge. He says, "He drank so much, forget about it." "When did he drink? By the Seder?" "No, a lot before the Seder." So they took him They picked him up and they schlepped him to the Rebbe. On the way, it was a long way, he sobered up a little bit. He comes to the Rebbe. Rav Yitzchak tells him, please, Reb Chaim, tell me. Tell me about your Seder last night. He blushed and he put his head down. He said, I don't want to tell you. He says, please tell me about the Seder. He says, I can't. I'm too embarrassed. Rav Yitzchak saw it's not going. He says, I'm the rabbi of the city. I demand from you to tell me everything about your Seder last night. He didn't have a choice. Blushingly, a red face, his head totally down, he started to relate the story low. He says, Rebbe, you know, I work very, very hard to make a living. I don't have a penny to my name. And Pesach is the worst time. Pesach, for most of the days of the Yom Tov, I don't make a living, and the expenses are very high with the matzah and the wine and the food and everything. And it's very, very difficult time. And I have to tell you the truth, from time to time, when the situation becomes really lousy, I take a little drink. He says, this Erev Pesach in the morning, we had nothing at home, nothing. No matzah, no wine, we didn't have anything. So what did I do? I saw it's going to be a bitter situation. So I went, he says, unfortunately, and I took a drink, and I had a little too much. I had a little too much, especially, he says, I knew that for 8 days I'm not going to be able to drink, because it's Pesach. So he says, I drank for 8 days. And I fell asleep. I fell asleep. Ma'ariv, my wife woke me up. The children, everyone is going to Ma'ariv. I wasn't interested, and I couldn't budge. 8 o'clock, she wakes me up. My Ma'ariv is finished. Every home is starting the Seder now, but I knew how our Seder's going to look. And I couldn't get up anyway. Another hour, she said, the children are going to fall asleep. Every Jewish home makes a Seder. You're a lousy husband, you're a lousy father, you're a lowlife. Get out of bed. He said, I was so drunk, I didn't budge. And every hour she woke me up. Finally, everyone went to sleep. 2 o'clock in the morning, I realized it's Pesach of the Welt. You have to make a Seder. He says, I got up. I went over to the table. The little food we had, we didn't have too much. I turned to God. I said, listen, Master of the Universe, my name is Chaim the Water Carrier. I'm a bitter Jew. I have nothing. I don't even know how to read Hebrew, so I can't read Haggadah. Nor do I understand Haggadah, nor can I even read most of the Aleph Beis. So I can't do a normal Seder like everyone does. But let me just tell you this. I know I heard that many, many years ago, you liberated the Jewish people from Egypt. And therefore, tonight, I want to thank you, Master of the Universe, for redeeming our people from oppression and molding us into a nation that is connected to you and serve you, and therefore I express to you my deepest thanks for redeeming us from Mitzrayim. And I also know that you promised us that you are still going to redeem us from the present exile, and we're still waiting for the day that Mashiach is going to come and redeem the Jewish people from the bitter exile. So listen, Master of the Universe, this is the conclusion. I thank you very much for what you did in the past, and I demand from you, and I pray to you to deliver what you promised to us for the future. He said, I finished and I went back to sleep. That was a Seder. So Rav Yitzchak said, you could go. You can go. He turned to Talmid and he said, and this Seder, which was done, no Haggadah, nothing, stop, was the most precious Seder in the whole world. Why? Why? There was emes, huh?
From the inside.
It was true. He connected. A Seder, we go through the robotic Kaddish, Urchatz, Karpas, Yachatz. But the essence of the Seder is sometimes missing. By this Jew, the external features were totally absent. The timing, the beauty, the food, the setup. But the essence, the relationship, was there. But the story is not over yet. Last year I was in Japan for Pesach. I was in Kobe. I came a few days before Pesach. Arrived, a long flight. 18 hours, you lose a day because it passed international date when we went through the Pacific. Came a few days before Pesach. Kobe, there are very few Jews. There are 70 Jews living there. But for the Seder, we had 200 Jews from different cities and suburbs of Japan. Jews that are there for reasons of business, are there for spiritual reasons. They go to the Far East, meditation, to find themselves. A lot of different types of Jews. And we had a wonderful, beautiful Seder in the Shul of Kobe, which I led. And we went through the Seder discussing different elements of it. And many of the Jews, it was a first time Jewish experience for them in their life. Especially, a lot of them ran away from Judaism as a consequence of the belief that there's no spirituality there. To find spirituality, you have to look elsewhere. So I tried to lead the Seder in a way to present the spiritual counterpart of every single one of the rituals. The inner significance of every single one of the mitzvahs and parts of the Haggadah that we do on Pesach. And of course you had so many people, and many of them, you know, were absolutely unaware of what's going on, the matzah and the wine and kairich and yachatz. It became very complicated. So at Shulchan Aruch, at the meal, I decided that this story of Rabbi Levi Yitzchak is the proper thing to say. So I stood up and said, I want to share with you a story. And I related the whole story of Rabbi Levi Yitzchak. And I said that I want to conclude that in this room, there are many different types of Jews. Many Jews don't even know Hebrew. And many Jews are totally unfamiliar with all the details and the nuances of Pesach. I want to say perhaps, the Seder that we're doing here in Japan is very unique and very powerful. And you never know. It's spiritual power. Because the relationship everyone has, and everyone can create, as Reb Levi Yitzchak explained concerning Reb Chaya. A lot of people's eyes swelled up with tears. But afterwards, a woman came over to me. She said, Rabbi Jacobson, I want to tell you something. I grew up in a secular home, a Jewish home, which was absolutely secular. I grew up in Wisconsin. We had no Jewishness. The only Jewishness we had was Yom Kippur. I knew that for 24 hours I can't eat and I can't drink. That's about it. Everything else was fine. So basically it came to be that the day I most despised and hated throughout the year was Yom Kippur. Because I knew it was the only day I can't eat and I can't drink. Then I grew up as a teenager, finished college, university, got my degrees. But there was something missing. I was looking for a spiritual meaning and issues that can deal with my personal relationship with other people and deep existential dilemmas that were perturbing me. So I went to my rabbi. Rabbi himself was a pretty secular Jew. The rabbi says, in Judaism we don't talk about these things. We only talk about social justice and humanitarian deeds. So I bought a ticket to India. And I'm this part of the world for 25 years. 25 years. There's only one thing I remember from my home. My Baba always told me that I am the ninth generation of Rabbi Levi Yitzchak of Berditchev. The ninth generation of Yitzchak of Berditchev. So I asked my Baba, who's Rabbi Levi Yitzchak of Berditchev? She said, I don't know, he was a great Jew. He must have been a humanitarian. So that's it, I know about my Yiddishkeit. So I'm here, I have no relationship. Why did I come tonight? Someone said, come over, why not? What could you lose already? 3 boring hours. She says, but I can't stand it. I used to go to synagogue, it was a disaster. I said, don't worry, it might be nice. So she says, thank you for bringing me back home again. Anyway, have a kosher and happy Pesach.
Rabbi Jacobson delivers this weekly class on the Tanya each Sunday morning at Heichal Menachem in the Borough Park section of Brooklyn, New York. To order additional tapes or to receive the tapes weekly by mail, please call Heichal Menachem at 718-633-1076.